Hey, it's Laura here. I want to let you know about a new investigative series we're launching next week on Full Story that's called Australia versus the Climate. For more than 25 years, nations around the world have been attending these meetings where they make big commitments to try and hold back climate change, to stop ecosystems collapsing and prevent countries disappearing underwater. But for much of that time, Australia has turned up to these meetings and done its best to limit their commitments to address the climate crisis.
I would argue the Australian government has been a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry from 1989 to this day.
Next week, nearly 200 countries will come together in Glasgow at a conference billed as the world's best last chance to get the climate crisis under control. So, what will Australia do this time?
When the government says we will meet and beat our Kyoto commitments, it's because of this scam that Australia pulled in 1997.
You can find the show in Full Story from Monday next week.
I'm Jane Lee, and this is The Full Story. As New South Wales and Victoria get out of lockdown, schools are opening back up too, which means more than a million kids are returning to school over the next fortnight.
My son Theo is 7 and just went back to school this morning after 4 months, or according to his best friend, 106 days of lockdown. Just before they left to go through the school gates, he did say, "Oh, Mum, I feel a bit weird." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I reckon that's what it feels like to be a little bit nervous, and that's okay."
For some parents and kids who've endured months of remote learning, this is exciting news.
Very excited about seeing my friends and seeing my teacher and also playing on the equipment.
So I'm just feeling, you know, this is life. This is life with COVID. I don't feel scared. I don't feel worried.
But others are worried about what this could mean for the spread of COVID-19.
We feel it would have been wise for the government to wait longer for this data before kids all came back to school.
Our school's Monday opening for preps this week was postponed by a day because of COVID cases on site last week before school had even reopened. So it certainly doesn't feel like we're out of the woods, and it does feel like there's still a lot of risk and a lot of uncertainty.
So how are teachers and schools going to manage this risk? And could this lead to more outbreaks in schools? Today, returning to school in a Delta outbreak. It's Thursday, the 21st of October.
My name's Jasmine. I'm a teacher at a primary school in Melbourne.
So Jasmine, why are we using a different name for you today?
Because public servants are not encouraged to speak to the media about things.
As a teacher, how have you been coping with remote learning?
Remote learning is a different kind of teaching. Some kids really enjoy working from home, working independently, and so some kids have been doing really well. Some kids find it much more difficult to work independently and really require the support of either a parent to help or one of their teachers. And there's a small amount that have disengaged from their learning a bit more generally. The biggest thing has been keeping them happy and socialised and making sure that they're doing all right in what has been an extended lockdown.
And have you personally known anyone who's contracted COVID during this time?
Yes, including a couple of kids who have got COVID. And it's really scary when kids are getting ill. Ambulances have been called, that kind of stuff. But of course, people have been left at home with their COVID if it's not a crucial emergency. And so that can be really, really tough.
So Jasmine, I know you're in a hotspot in Melbourne right now. As a teacher, how does that weigh on you, going back to school knowing that some kids have been sick?
It's frankly terrifying. The idea that particularly in hotspot areas where the disease is so rampant at the moment, we have huge case numbers daily at the moment, and to send kids into an environment, particularly unvaccinated young people, into an environment where they're going to be sharing their germs around is terrifying. We've already seen cases in schools when there's only been kids of essential workers there, or in year 12s that have gone back at the start of this term.
So, Kate, I know kids of essential workers have been in school part of the time, but this fortnight, most kids across New South Wales and Victoria are returning to school. Tell me more about how that's going to happen.
So, across both the states, it's been a staggered approach to having kids go back to school, which has been slightly confusing, I think.
Kate Kelly is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
So both states are reopening earlier than scheduled after they reached their 70% double dose target earlier. But I think we really need to keep in mind that those stats only refer to those 16 and over.
What's the current scenario for vaccinating kids in Australia right now?
One of the issues with schools going back is the glaringly obvious that most of these kids can't get vaccinated, right? So only 16 plus have been eligible to get vaccinated since the end of August. Mm. And children as young as 12 have been eligible to get vaccinated, but for just over a month. So obviously a lot of parents are really quite stressed about this, is that you have unvaccinated children coming in large groups together, potentially transmitting and spreading the virus and potentially then bringing it home. And it's unclear if or when, at this stage, vaccines for under 12s will be introduced in Australia.
And so against that backdrop, what is COVID transmission looking like in both states in the broader population?
So New South Wales daily case numbers have been going down for weeks now and are currently in the low hundreds. Here in Victoria, case numbers in recent weeks have been the highest they have ever been. So we're looking at over 2,000 cases a day. And we are starting to see those numbers fall back slightly to the high 1,000s, but they're still much higher than New South Wales at the moment.
So we've got more than a million kids going back to school across both states, many of whom won't be vaccinated. But this has happened before. Kids have gone back to school while COVID is still spreading in the community. Is this return to school any different to previous times?
I think the key thing here is Delta. Both New South Wales and Victorian schools have been open and shut at various points across the last 2 years, but Delta presents an extra challenge. I've spoken to lots of parents who say, oh, well, last year we knew that it didn't really spread in children, that it was exceptionally rare that children caught it. And if they did, they probably wouldn't even get, you know, that sick. COVID was very much a virus that adults got. And now that's just not entirely true anymore. We know children have gotten sick and transmitted this variant of COVID. And that's happening now as we speak. That's happening across childcare centres and in schools. As recently as last month, we knew that 45% of all active COVID cases in Melbourne were in children and teenagers.
Hmm. So, I mean, it's a troubling picture, but I guess schools are reopening despite all of these risk factors. So what has this sped up schedule on reopening meant for the schools that are preparing to return?
Well, to be completely frank, speaking to teachers and parents and principals and the union, what it means is that they're just actually not that ready. So they've had less time to prepare to have kids in the classrooms in a safe manner.
It's frustrating because schools have been trying to work out how to best transition kids back, how to make the situation safe. And then to have the timeline change by just a little bit just before it happens is actually really frustrating. Like, it shows a lack of respect for our profession.
Kate, we know the spread of COVID can be mitigated by social distancing and ensuring there's proper ventilation in enclosed spaces. Do we know how schools are planning to implement these measures in the classroom?
So New South Wales is a bit ahead of Victoria here. Last week, every school was told how many kids they can have in a classroom in order to keep them COVID safe. So they're desperately trying to figure out how to trim down class sizes now and where to put any extra kids if they can't fit in anymore. In Victoria, they're only just starting to audit classrooms. So kids are already returning to school and teachers don't have any idea if there's enough ventilation in the room for it to be COVID safe. So some teachers are just going in blind.
I can keep the door open and I can open some of the windows, but I don't actually know whether that creates enough of a cross breeze to clear out the room. I haven't been provided with a CO2 monitor to check that.
You mentioned there, Kate, concerns around opening windows and doors for ventilation. What are some of the other concerns that teachers have about, you know, preparing to battle potential COVID risks in schools when they go back?
One of the other key concerns is that a lot of them are actually just not sure what happens when an outbreak occurs. And at this point, pretty much every teacher that I've spoken to in the last week or so is working on the assumption that there's going to be an outbreak in their school at some point. So some schools have tried to segregate them into bubbles, but that doesn't work because of teacher aides floating around and that sort of thing.
What does it look like when teachers try to separate kids into bubbles? What does that mean?
So that means that if, you know, you have potentially 30 kids in your class doesn't mix at recess or lunch with other classes. So you don't have, you know, schoolyards sort of with, you know, 800 kids just running around wherever they want. You have classes hanging out with each other and only each other.
We can tell kids as much as we want to keep away from each other, but actually enforcing that in the school is, I think, difficult and in some ways mean. Kids naturally flock together. They stand close together. They touch each other. They love to be so close to each other. And so we can try to make them into bubbles and make them socially distanced, but I just don't see how effectively that could work in most schools I know about. It's not like we have spare classrooms or extra playgrounds to separate kids into.
Next, what does going to school look like in a COVID normal world? It sounds like there's still a lot of work to do. So what have state governments promised they'll do going forward to help resolve these issues?
So this is an issue that both governments are trying to address in different ways. So on Monday, the New South Wales government announced it would spend $100 million on making sure public schools had enough ventilation, including installing ventilation systems in smaller classrooms. So the Premier, Dominic Perrottet, said the funding would also be directed towards replacing windows, ceiling and exhaust fans and additional servicing of ventilation systems.
And what about Victoria? Has the Victorian government promised any future measures to try to mitigate this risk?
Yeah, so the Victorian government has promised a raft of measures. And a cornerstone of them is that the state is going to get 51,000 air purification devices into all government and low-fee non-government schools in higher risk rooms. So that'll include, you know, rooms like sick bays, music rooms, and other sort of high traffic areas. And then the same schools will be entitled to a grant of up to $25,000 to purchase shade sails. And that means, you know, if they're creating shady outdoor areas, that they can potentially set up classrooms outdoors when the weather permits. And then they're also going to conduct an audit of schoolrooms, but that has started now and will run into term four. So there are some key things that they're doing to make sure that classrooms are safe for students. The concern from some teachers has just been about the timing and the fact that they're returning to school before those audits take place or some of the purifiers are put in place.
But the Department of Education is discouraging PNCs from purchasing their own purifiers because they just say they don't need to do so and that natural ventilation will be enough. So they're relying on experts who have indicated that fresh air ventilation is the most effective way to ventilate classrooms. And they say that their audit has revealed that most of the spaces, the New South Wales classrooms, can achieve good ventilation just from opening the windows. And also I've spoken to teachers in Victoria who are doing anything they can to improve ventilation and make classes safer.
Besides double masking, I will definitely be making sure the classroom doors and windows are open as much as possible, whether it's raining or whether it's the sun is burning us. I've already started talking to my students about how that they will wear masks. They're not mandated to because they're littler ones, but I have been encouraging them to do that as much as possible, and they are very receptive to that. I will be taking them outside to eat so that they can safely remove their masks. I'll be teaching outside if there is space and I possibly can. And I will be trying to make sure that the kids understand what to do to try and keep themselves safe as much as they possibly can.
So I know we've been talking about public schools, but I think it is important to note that all of these things don't seem to be an issue in the private sector. Essentially, the ones that I've spoken to have had the resources to conduct their own independent audits and to put in air purifiers where necessary. They've also been able to do CO2 testing. But then obviously the concern is that then you see a private public, you know, that disparity that already exists widened and taken to a health level, which parents are really concerned about.
In places where there are thousands of cases in the community, like my area, like Wyndham Vale or Hume or any of these other areas, the opening the schools is a recipe for spreading that virus further. And so I think that pushing those numbers down before we start opening schools and putting young people at risk is the thing that has to happen. We've fought this pandemic for a year and a half, nearly 2 years. Why, when we're so close to the end of it, so close to vaccines, like actually stopping the spread to such a significant degree, why do we want to let it rip amongst kids?
So Jasmine, the teacher you introduced me to, thinks reopening schools in areas like hers, where case numbers remain really high in Victoria, is really putting children's health at risk while there are still so many unknowns in the mix. What have other teachers and parents told you about how they're feeling right now?
The majority of people, teachers, parents that I've spoken to, would agree that those concerns are quite valid and that they share them. That's across both states. The thing is, in reporting on these issues, you never want to scare parents. You know, parents don't want to hear that they're potentially sending their kids into unsafe learning environments. So it's not to have all the alarms going off, being like, oh my God, this is really concerning. Everyone should be really, really worried about this. It's just to say really calmly, this is an issue. We need to make sure that our kids are in ventilated rooms. It hasn't happened yet because, you know, schools reopening was brought forward. And whilst that's a really exciting thing because we want to get kids back into the classroom, we want to get teachers back into the classroom, you know, everyone is hanging out for this. We just want to make sure it's done in the safest way possible.
Mm. So I suppose the risk of spread just isn't going away anytime soon. And this could lead to permanent changes to schools going forward in a sort of post-COVID world. How do you think schools will look in both states post-pandemic?
I think we're really actually just beginning that journey to work out what schools look like. And I think that's why you're seeing all this kind of confusion and angst at the moment, because, you know, lots of parents are going, are my kids going to be safe? And lots of teachers are going, you know, are these kids I teach going to be safe? A key thing that might be implemented in schools is rapid antigen testing. Down here in Victoria, they are starting to do small trials on the school gates. So kids are tested as they come into school. Obviously, if those tests are negative, they can come in and do a normal day's learning. And a lot of epidemiologists around the country have said that this is one really good way to stop it before it even gets in. So I think in the coming months and years, you'll see those sort of pilot programs take off and be implemented across the board.
I think that teachers need to be empowered to make decisions that are about the safety of their students each and every moment, whether that's leaving stuffy classrooms or whatever it is. Like, I think that every case that we stop spreading is actually a victory and a win. And so the more mitigation methods that we put in, the absolute better.
And schools are in the process of working that out. So whether that's bubble systems where some kids only mix with certain other classes, whether that's separated lunch and recess. You know, there are lots of things that we know how to do now which do help mitigate the spread. You know, I think the biggest game changer will be when kids themselves can get vaccinated. And that will mean that schools can look and be, you know, pretty much as normal as it was before the pandemic.
Thanks to Guardian Australia reporter Kate Kelly, to Melbourne school teacher Jasmine, and to all the parents who shared their stories with us. You can read more of Kate's reporting on schools at guardian.com.au, and we'll put some links to her recent articles up on the Full Story website. This episode was produced by Bethany Atkinson-Quinton and Laura Murphy-Oates. Sound design by Daniel Simo. Full Story's executive producers are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and Laura Murphy-Oates. I'm Jane Lee. Catch you next time.